The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
The following broadcast may contain free thinking and open-minded discussion, ideas, skepticism, and adult subject matter. Topics will be discussed using adult language, sometimes gratuitously. Get ready to move the conversation forward. This ain't your granddad's news and comment show. This is I Doubt It Podcast with Brittany Page and Jesse Dalamore.
Welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us. Episode 914 of I Doubt It Podcast. I'm your host, Jesse Dalamore, joined today by the lovely, the talented, and the scholarly Brittany Page, everybody.
Well, we had a few requests about what we should cover today.
That's not unusual.
That's not unusual, but the requests about what we should talk about is unusual because we received another death threat, and I say another because this has happened before, and it is kind of a scary and unfortunate reality of being a person that is, like, online, and we hear it a lot from the listeners, actually. They're like, don't read my name with this email.
Yeah.
Like, they don't even want to be, have their name associated. They don't want to, you know, they want to be anonymous. And I totally understand that.
Well, it's the other reason that we don't give full names, even when we read Patreon.
Right.
Even if you write your full name.
Right.
We just usually give the last initial.
Right.
That's another element of protecting. So people have to go through this shit that we have to go through.
Yeah.
Unfortunately have to go through.
Right. And so we got another death threat and we reported it. We're not going to give an update about what has transpired since making that initial report.
Indicating there are updates, but we're going to wait until we have more of a conclusion before we make updates.
Right. And we don't want to interfere with any investigations that may be happening. So, you know, hang on for that. I know people are really wanting an update, but just kind of hang on for that. So we're going to play the threats that we received. We want to give kind of a warning for people that may not want to hear it because it is violent and vulgar. So I think we should play both of them in rapid succession. And if you don't want to hear these, what do they need to skip? Like 40 seconds ahead? 40 seconds about?
Yeah, about a minute.
Okay, skip about a minute ahead, and then you will not hear them. But these are the death threats that we received last week.
You fucking piece of shit. You're fucking dead. You and your family, motherfucker. You're fucking dead.
That's number one. Here's number two.
Your wife is an ugly fucking cunt. We're gonna rape that fucking ugly bitch and kill her, you cocksucker.
So less than a minute, but
yeah.
That
so
was it. Left in at 11:19 and 11:23 on April 29th.
Interesting way to start the day.
Yeah.
So what's most concerning, and Jesse, I know you did a video about this, and I guess I haven't really had a chance to talk about my reaction to it, but I was most disturbed by the sound of what appears to be a child in the background of that second voicemail. That was very striking to me. I sent it to several of my friends trying to get confirmation of whether or not they agreed that that seemed to be a child that you could hear in the background. And I think that's the most striking and concerning thing for me. And
the FBI seems to agree.
And so, yeah, that's definitely a concerning element. So, yeah, it's just a weird thing that you have to endure, I guess. And I wish it were different. And I know I hear this a lot from people that are online is like just they get death threats. It's like a thing that they have come to expect of being a political commentator online. And I think it suggests something really toxic and poisonous about our society and the current discourse, that people feel like this is a legitimate way to air frustration or just comport yourself. I wish that it were not the case, but I'm hoping that, you know, people who do this start to receive consequences, and that will hopefully get people to understand that this actually isn't an acceptable response to disagreement or anger or however you're choosing to deal with your emotional state, I guess.
People may not remember, but there was once a time in American politics where this type of behavior, these types of calls, these types of threats, these types of actions were universally condemned by everybody, both parties. It's not that way on the Republican side, but I'll get to that in a second. This is one of those deals where when I hear a voicemail that has been sent a threat by some unhinged idiot, some violent jerk off online, sent to like Lauren Boebert or name somebody on the other side, I am repulsed. I am disgusted. I am very bothered. And I always think to myself, they're setting back the cause. They're not helping by doing this. They're harming. And I don't get, in fact, I've seen comments on the YouTube video about this where people justify this. Well, maybe you shouldn't call names. Maybe you shouldn't say what you say about Donald Trump, as though there's any justification to, and I'm not even talking about the name calling you an ugly fucking cunt and me a cocksucker or whatever. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the threats of violence and rape and death and murder. What the fuck is going on that this is acceptable by a wide swath of the American public in the Republican Party?
Yeah. And I guess in an attempt to inject some levity into the situation, I have to say that it's kind of funny the people that have been like, Brittany, you're very beautiful. You're very beautiful. Don't worry about that. What's being said.
Right. Like they need to...
We can't confirm on the other parts because we don't know you personally, but but we can see that you are pretty, okay? But we also want to say that we've gotten a lot of supportive comments and a lot of supportive messages from people that have been just so kind. And, you know, like several different Patreon supporters have sent in messages. Kristen, Will, Austin sent in a very, very kind voice memo that was emotional to listen to, and it felt a bit self-indulgent to play it on the show because it was very kind and talked about, you know, the difference that you and I have made in his life and in other people's lives. And it was really, really nice. And we've just gotten so many messages that we really appreciate. So, you know, thank you to everyone who has reached out and checked on us and offered to be our personal security or
that multiple people have done that.
We definitely appreciate that. And Jesse, I was really taking hits on that Monday because it wasn't just the death threat, it wasn't just the rape threat. But we also got a message of someone who said that the subject line was, please separate your show from Whitney.
Yeah.
And we're not going to read it, but they basically want me off the show. And I was like,
wow. They care so little about who you are that they don't even know your name is Brittany.
They did. They wrote Brittany next time. They mentioned me. But at first in the subject line, it was Whitney. And I'm like, wow, I cannot win today. That was my Monday. And I was like, I cannot win today.
I also love the rampant, I don't know why you don't want to read it, but the rampant internalized misogyny from this lady who just bitches about your looks. I don't like her face. I don't like her look or the sound of her voice. It's the same thing you hear from dudes like, she's just shrill, blah.
Well, people have, when you started your John Adams podcast with Ian, everyone should go check that out. New episode just dropped. Look at that, little plug for you. People were concerned that your Dollamore Daily was changing or even that this I Doubt It podcast was changing. And I think because people aren't, you know, following you as closely as some other people that send us death and rape threats, that they don't understand like the different shows that you have. And so, you know, when she's saying, please separate your show from Whitney, this is a separate show from the Dollamore Daily, and it's a separate show from the John Adams podcast.
Yeah.
And we've been doing this show for 10 years.
Longer than anything else, this is what we've done.
Yeah, so...
That's what's interesting about this is someone to be such a super fan that they just can't stand you. They love me, but they just can't stand you. There would be no Dollamore Daily without I Doubt It podcast. Like, we wouldn't... That evolution wouldn't have been made at all.
Yeah.
So they're not listening because of your voice. Thanks a lot, Brittany, to hear. But that is the case.
Yes. So we want to take a moment to thank the sponsor of today's episode, Uplift Standing Desk.
Finding the right materials and tech to fit your working environment can be tough. With our podcast spaces, we went through a bunch of different desks and chairs while searching for a flexible setup that worked best for us. That setup, our Uplift Standing Desk.
As the New York Times Wirecutter's standing desk pick for 5 years running, Uplift Desk doesn't just aim to improve your work, but your health as well. Studies show that using a standing desk can heighten your mood and focus, and moving more throughout the day lowers your risk of disease.
We absolutely love our Uplift Desk because we can go from sitting to standing height with one press of a button while prepping for and shooting the show. It's also super stable and comes with cable management accessories to help conceal all those wires. Customize your Uplift Desk with over 100 desktop styles and hundreds of accessories. You'll get 4 free when you buy a desk.
Elevate your work and your health. Go to UpliftDesk.com/IDoubtIt to get 5% off your first purchase when you use code IDoubtIt at checkout. Uplift Desk has 6,000 five-star Google reviews and counting, so we're not the only people singing their praises. And with a 15-year warranty, free shipping, free returns with free return shipping, you cannot lose if you try them out. Uplift your health and productivity.
Just head to UpliftDesk.com/IDoubtIt or click the link in the description to score 5% off of your order when you use code IDoubtIt at checkout. Work better, live healthier, with Uplift Desk. So moving on to some listener communication, if you'd like to call and communicate with the show, the number is 657-464-7609. And of course, you can always email a voice memo or a regular old-fashioned email to idoubtit@dollamore.com.
All right. We are going to read a message from a Patreon supporter who sent us a very nice message. This is from Calvin. I've never had a shout out on a podcast before. That was cool. Happy to support y'all. I love the dynamic between the both of you, and it's refreshing that neither of you shy away from showing emotion.
See, a fan of Whitney.
Especially
Calvin loves him some Whitney.
Especially Jesse. We need more men to understand that having and expressing heartfelt emotions does not make them any less of a man. Y'all are amazing. Keep up the fantastic work. Very nice. Very nice, Calvin.
Very nice.
Yes. Thank you for that. We do.
Another shout out.
We do cry a lot. That is true.
I am a crier. Unabashedly so.
Especially on our Patreon bonus episodes.
That is right.
Sometimes we cannot make it through it without crying. Okay, thank you again to Calvin. This is a message from a longtime listener, longtime supporter of the show, Henry. Hey, Brittany P. and Jesse D., long time no talk, and feel free to use my name if you decide to air this. Probably TL, probably too long, don't read. I don't know why I struggled with
TLDR.
The acronym. Yeah. For you, LOL. These last 6 months have been very difficult. Cycles of pain, the daily reminder of humanity's inhumanity. It really is all too much. Last year, a wonderful woman I fell in love with was forced to move out of Texas because her two beautiful girls happened to be trans and they lost their healthcare providers. We are truly in dystopian times. That said, I'm going to hold my nose and vote for Biden in November. He has been a real progressive president as far as labor, but he is ideologically opposed to health care for all and countless other progressive policies. The truth of the matter is that we have to vote for the enemy that we want to fight again in America. Here is my question for you both. Also, if the far more reasonable host please answers first. I guess Henry will let us decide who that is. Do you see the difference in the left/liberal desire to act against the establishment when a Democrat is in power versus a Republican? I have no evidence outside of anecdotal experiences, but feel it in my bones that Israel would have nowhere near the support on the left if Trump was in power. It feels that this genocide would have had so much more pushback if Trump was the one aiding and abetting it. But because it is old Uncle Joe, they assume he is doing the right thing. Right now, I suffer from the trauma of the bombs dropped on the heads of children. When I sleep, I hear them. I am not the only one that does. But my liberal friends sleep like babies, and they don't understand why I care about the Palestinian cause. We are all more connected as humans than we realize, and these monsters in the IDF and their leadership will pay an inevitable cycle of violence that they are building from the ground up. Literally, mass graves are the foundation of their humanity. Last thing is an answer to Brittany P's question about what I am going to do about door knocking for Biden in 2024. I am not doing one fucking thing for this guy. I am not talking to anyone about how good of a guy he is. I am not going to convince my Muslim friends how, even though America funded the slaughter of their family and the erasure of their culture, they need to, quote, get over themselves, parenthetically Hillary Clinton, and go for Joe. I am an atheist and a humanist, and I can do the math and will vote for the enemy that I want to fight against, but I will not give away my ethical structure that makes me who I am. The choice to lose is Joe's, not ours. There is no grassroots base that is going to do the work needed to get out the vote for him, and you know this by looking at the polls and actions of the under 30 and the scholars' protests. I love you guys so much. Brittany is the best part. Henry.
Love the show. Brittany's the best part. Bye.
So the more reasonable one, Jesse, go ahead.
Right.
So the basic question is, if Donald Trump were the president right now, as the war was going on, would there be as much support for his actions? I'm assuming is what the question is. And I don't know. I mean, I think probably there would be an element to what Henry is saying here. I think that it's true that there would be more people giving pushback to Donald Trump. Although, Jesse, you brought up an interesting point the past couple of days. This has been something that you've been kind of angry about, and you've brought it up several times, which is that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is a far-right person. He's a far-right candidate. He's leading a far-right government. And yet... And you also say he's a Trump supporter. And
he's a Trump-like character, too.
Right.
And corrupt, criminal.
And yeah. And yet we're seeing widespread support, it seems, for the Israeli government's actions against Gaza and the Palestinian people. So it is kind of a confusing situation where it's hard to understand what the motivations of people are and how things might be different if instead of President Biden, we had a President Trump.
Yeah, I'm buoyed by, I don't know what kind of media you consume, Henry. Obviously, some good stuff since you still listen to the show after all these years. But I don't see a ton of, other than institutional support for Israel and the giving of billions of dollars to a developed nation that doesn't need the money. Other than that, like just grassroots wise, what I see is overwhelming support for the Palestinian people and against the whole wholesale slaughter and genocide of women, children, and innocent civilians, unarmed combatants, or civilians, not combatants. So I certainly do think that if it was a Donald Trump administration and we were navigating these same waters and putting together multi-billion dollar aid packages, liberals would be outraged by what was taking place because it would be Donald Trump and a Donald Trump clone acting in concert with one another to eradicate the Palestinian people. But because it's Joe Biden, a guy who has said with his mouth, on camera, that he's a Zionist, people just go along with that and don't levy the justifiable criticism against a monster like Bibi Netanyahu. So it's unfortunate, but I don't think people think clearly enough about these issues. When we talk about genocide and 40,000 plus people killed and upwards of 20,000 children killed, or whatever that number is, people, the people who are supporting, ignore the death toll and the carnage and the decimation of Gaza and just say, well, what about Hamas? Hamas is bad. Hamas is a terrorist organization. I have no sympathy or empathy for them. I hope they fucking die. Hamas. Palestinians do, I'm not, and I'm preaching to the choir here, but Palestinians aren't Hamas. Certainly some Palestinians are Hamas, but the large portion of the Palestinian people are like 18 and below. They're very young, didn't participate in the election in 2006 to make Hamas the political ruling mechanism within Gaza. So anyway, like I said, preaching to the choir, it is disheartening, but I would say look at the good things that are happening and the groundswell of support, not the media narrative. And I think the tide is turning, and I think you would agree with that based on some of the latest statements that we've heard from the State Department, from leaders of the CIA, from the administration, that they are starting to put conditions on, starting to speak a little bit more directly to Israel and the fascist government in that country.
Yeah, and I do hear what Henry's saying, because I think you would have these certain examples of like prominent voices that consider themselves to be on the left but not necessarily leftists that are still more sympathetic to Israel than they are Palestinians. But there does seem to be a changing tide when you have these student protesters leading these campus protests across the country. And although they are sending the police in to, you know, kick in these kids' skulls, there has been a lot of support for these kids on the ground. And sure, there's been a lot of pushback against the kids and people trying to focus on that they broke into buildings and, oh, look at this. It's been a strange experience, because I did a video about the protests and specifically Megyn Kelly calling them ugly and homely or whatever. And I referenced, you know, actual things that have been happening in Gaza, including the number of kids that are losing their limbs. And it was a strange experience to read through some of the comments and have people not comment on that aspect of it at all, to your point, Jesse, about the horrors that are happening in Gaza, and instead say, well, these student protesters broke into buildings.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, where are your priorities? I don't really, it's like confusing.
Well, I think people, especially related to protests, they're not ahead of the game. They don't look back at history and understand protests work. They do move the needle. They change people's minds. And civil disobedience by way of protesting is effective. When people watch the cops, these jackbooted fascist thugs, harming peaceful young adults protesting and utilizing their First Amendment rights to redress their government, people are outraged by that. Even people who are sympathetic to the cause of what has turned into a genocide on the part of Israel, they see that and they go, this is wrong.
Right.
So there have been some bright spots, I think. I think you just have to, unfortunately, look a little hard to recognize them.
Right. So thank you for that email, Henry. We appreciate it. We are going to read another email here before we move on to the news of the day. And to put this in context before we read it, we've been covering the latest restrictions on abortions. And we had talked about the Arizona abortion ban from 1864 that the Supreme Court had put into place or upheld. And that has been repealed. The Arizona governor signed a repeal of the state's near total abortion ban, which is great news. Democratic lawmakers had to band together to get it through the Republican controlled legislature there. And it's still unfortunate because, according to reporting from NBC, even after Hobbs's signature, the road ahead on how and what abortion restrictions will be enforced in Arizona remains complicated. The ban is still bound to go into effect for a period of time due to unique aspects of Arizona law. Under the Arizona Constitution, a fully enacted repeal of a law doesn't go into effect until 90 days after a legislative session concludes, unless it was passed by a supermajority in both legislative chambers. Last year's session ended on July 31st, so if the current session were to end at a similar time, the repeal would not fully execute until late October or early November. But Arizona doesn't have a fixed legislative calendar, meaning Republicans could also keep the session open to further delay the repeal's implementation. So that means that, unfortunately, the abortion restrictions will still be in place for a period of time, even though this was repealed. Now, on that note, we did get a great email here that I'm going to read related to all of this, but please note that this email came through before the announcement of the repeal was successful. Hi, Jesse and Brittany. I have been listening to your podcast for 3 years now and have never felt compelled to write, but today's Arizona Supreme Court ruling has greatly disturbed me as this hits on a personal experience. I have lived in Arizona since 2019 when abortion was federally protected. So even though I was aware that I was moving from a blue state to a red state, worry about my reproductive rights wasn't a concern. When Dobbs overturned Roe v. Wade, the 15-week ban seemed restrictive, but not as extreme as Texas, so still not a problem. Until my husband and I started trying for a child in March of 2023. Because I am high risk, we went to a preconception counseling at a high-risk OB and thought we were set for a safe pregnancy. I received, in June of 2023, a letter stating that the high-risk OB's practice was closing. Not a big deal since I wasn't pregnant, and the OB had told me that it would take us over a year to conceive. Wrong. 2 weeks later, I found out I was pregnant, and while I was elated, I was also terrified. It will be okay, just find someone else. Well, it was easier said than done. I spent hours on the phone trying to find a high-risk doctor that would, one, take my insurance, two, deliver in a decent hospital, and three, have an appointment before I was 15 weeks pregnant. Having the combination of all three of these elements was nearly impossible to find. I ended up having to travel over 45 minutes, roughly 40 miles, to get an appointment with a doctor who had rights at the hospital that I wanted to deliver at to get an appointment at 11 weeks. While we ended up having a great experience and loved the doctors we worked with, the constant reminder that if something went wrong, I would have to travel out of state makes me concerned about other women. While I was fortunate to be able to take time off work to travel to get the care I needed, many are not. There were so many things that could have gone wrong with my pregnancy, and I was one of the lucky ones, but not all women are so lucky. My husband and I have now decided that we will not be having any more children after this. While I sit across from my daughter sleeping while writing this and being so happy that I had her, I just can't do it again with this law in place. I am getting an IUD at the end of the week, and we are considering having my husband get a vasectomy just to be safe. I hate to see what this does to not only women's reproductive health care, but any type of health care for women in this state. I also fear for the health care that will be available for my daughter in the future. I am so disappointed that in the state where I found my husband, daughter, and discovered my authentic self, isn't going to be the place where I want my daughter to have a life and family of her own. This is not the way to motivate people to have more children. It's the opposite of that, and just instills fear. Thank you for your messaging and constant references to social injustices in our world. Keep doing what you do because people are listening, even the haters. While Brittany is the best part, Jesse does have his moments.
Love the show. Brittany's the best part. Bye.
Wishing you the best, CK.
At least it's plural, moments, not moment.
Yes, you know? Yes. Looking on the bright side.
Listen, it is a dystopian type of situation in states all across the country, in Arizona included. And it does not matter that there is a Democrat governor and Katie Hobbs there. Republicans control the legislature. And this is why elections matter more than ever. This is why people who will protest and either not vote for Joe Biden or inexplicably vote for a Donald Trump to protest against Joe Biden are cutting off their nose to spite their face. Because this is what we're going to end up with a Donald Trump in office at a federal level again. We're going to have a national ban. He may not say that directly now, and he's dancing around and playing cute on the issue, but that is what they're gunning for. He is going to be led around by the nose, by the Heritage Foundation, who are the authors and chief designers of Project 2025, and it is without doubt, not hyperbole to say, that's their agenda.
I'm glad that you brought that up, Jesse, because Donald Trump gave an interview to Time Magazine this past week, and I just want to briefly talk about that since you brought it up, because he's kind of teasing his announcement on what his position is going to be on abortion pills. And you know, he was doing this with what abortion restriction he was going to support in the first place. He like kept teasing this announcement on what his position was going to be, like he's on a game show or something, instead of like stating what a policy is that's going to materially impact people's lives.
I mean, everything's a fucking reality show with this goober, even though it literally reality for people's lives.
Right. And so Time magazine reporter asked, do you think women should be able to get the abortion pill mifepristone? And Trump said, well, I have an opinion on that, but I'm not going to explain. I'm not going to say it yet, but I have pretty strong views on that, and I'll be releasing it in probably over the next week. And they said, well, this is a big question, Mr. President, because your allies have called for enforcement of the Comstock Act, which prohibits the mailing of drugs used for abortions by mail. The Biden Department of Justice has not enforced it. Would your Department of Justice enforce it? Trump, I will be making a statement on that over the next 14 days. Time magazine, you will? Trump, yeah, I have a big statement on that. I feel very strongly about it. I actually think it's a very important issue.
You know, he's, it is similar to Trump. This is Trump recognizing his limitations. Remember when Tommy Tuberville was asked about IVF?
Yes.
And he's like, listen, that's very serious. We need to, yeah, you know, very serious issue. We just want people to have babies, you know. And then the reporter's like, well, yeah, that's what IVF is. Yeah, again, very serious. We just need to take it very seriously. Donald Trump recognizes that he is absolutely just a dumb fuck. So he just says, oh, big announcement, huge. It's going to be big. The biggest you've ever seen, the likes of which no one's ever seen my announcement. He gets that he's a moron and he doesn't want to step on his dick. So he just says, we're going to be having something said. It's very important. So important, I have to leave a cliffhanger here for you.
Well, and frankly, it doesn't matter what he says because we know what the plan is.
That's
and
right.
We should always assume that he's going to say whatever he needs to say in order to try to convince the largest number of people that he's not as radical as he actually is. But we know he's radical. So
yeah.
That's what we need to remember. So let's take a moment to thank our Patreon supporters before
yes.
we get into the meat of the show. We want to give a shout out to our new Patreon supporters, Daniel D.
Daniel D.
Terrence M.
Terrence M.
Virginia.
Virginia.
Sharon S.
Sharon S.
Rosalind S.
Rosalind S.
Wendy H.
Wendy H.
Nancy MLC.
Nancy MLC.
Bev M.
Bev M.
Barry J.
Barry J.
Nancy Z.
Nancy Z.
Supporter.
Supporter. Thank you so much, supporter.
That's someone who's like, I want to be anonymous. I don't even want my first name on here. Pete.
Pete.
Mike W.
Mike W.
Jan T.
Jan T.
Nick H.
Nick H.
Priscilla M.
Priscilla M.
And Steven.
Steven.
And then we want to give a special shout out to our Patreon supporters who increased their pledge, and that would be Austin F.
Austin F. We love you.
And Will E.
Will E.
Thank you so very much for your support. We could not do it without you. Remember, the main benefit of Patreon is that you get access to an ad-free version of the show. You can paste the RSS link that you are given within Patreon and put it into whatever podcatcher you use to listen to the show. So Spotify, whatever else exists, I don't know. And you can also check out our bonus episodes that we put up. And we also send out an end of year gift every year on Patreon. We still have some of those stickers left over, actually, that yes, I am still sending out to people. So if you're getting your welcome stickers, you're seeing that you're getting the end of your gift from last year, because I'm going to keep sending the stickers out while we have them. Why not?
Yes.
So thank you again for your support. We really appreciate it, especially in the midst of weeks like the one that we had last week.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Thanks for not wanting us dead or raped. We'd love to hear from you. 657-464-7609. Of course, you can email a voice memo from your smartphone to idoubtit@dollamore.com.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Dollamocracy. Facing down pessimistic politics with realistic optimism.
So there's a lot of moving parts right now. There's a lot of kind of continuous breaking news, because Hamas has said in a statement that they have agreed to a ceasefire proposal. An Israeli official has told NBC News that the proposal that Hamas has agreed to is not the framework that was agreed upon with mediators. So there's a lot of back and forth going on right now. And inevitably, by the time that you listen to this or that you're watching this, there is likely going to be more developments related to the ceasefire.
Or so, things could change altogether related to what we say, because it's right. So in flux right now.
Right. So just keep that in mind with everything that we're about to cover. But as it stands now, today, the Israeli military instructed about 100,000 people to evacuate from East Rafah. And remember, this is something that the world and the United States has been saying do not do to Israel. They're saying do not go forward into Rafah, because this is already a humanitarian catastrophe. And now it is looking like the Israeli military is preparing to disregard all of that and proceed into Rafah.
All the spokesperson for the Israeli Defense Forces at a briefing confirmed that there is an ongoing evacuation of about 100,000 people from eastern Rafah. Now, he didn't say how long this is going to take, but he said that this is not a widespread evacuation, but it only affects the eastern part of the town. It also confirmed, the IDF also confirmed that they are informing residents, including dropping flyers, encouraging them to move to what they say is an extended humanitarian area, in particular to Al-Mawasi, which is a town on Gaza's coastline, officially to allow them to have more access to humanitarian aid. But the fear is that this is in preparation for the much announced and anticipated ground military invasion or operation by Israel into Rafah. Now, this has been discouraged several times continuously by humanitarian organizations and allies of Israel, including the United States, for fear that this operation could lead to a humanitarian catastrophe, because there are more than 1 million Palestinians, many of whom had to flee other parts of Gaza because of the war, that are finding shelter in Rafah. Now, as you mentioned, the CIA has confirmed that Director William Burns will travel to Israel today to try to, in what it looks like a last-ditch diplomatic attempt to get Israel and Hamas to agree on a ceasefire and hostage release deal before tanks roll into Rafah.
And so this is obviously very disturbing, because you have over 1 million people that have been pushed into Rafah, that have nowhere to go, that are experiencing starvation, that need medical care, that need, you know, all kinds of things that they currently don't have. And I know it's going to seem a little strange that we're going to play this clip next.
Well, let me say, before we move on to that clip, the desperation of the situation on the ground in Palestine, in Gaza, is it cannot be overstated. It is rubble. There is no infrastructure. So the manner with which they have to flee, they have to retreat away from the new bombing zone, the new leveling of already leveled buildings, where it's on foot. There is no mass exodus by way of vehicle, because it is just decimation. It is a otherworldly dystopian existence on the ground there. So the expectation of Israel to just scatter leaflets, here you go, get out, because we're going to do it. It's just another heartless genocidal act on the part of the Netanyahu government. Just gross.
Because there is nowhere for them to go. And we're going to get into whether or not people on the ground even believe that they can be safe if they do move in a little bit. But first, the clip that we're going to play is of Cindy McCain. And yeah, it's that Cindy McCain. But Cindy McCain is the executive director of the World Food Program. And she has been very outspoken about the war in Gaza and about the damage that has been caused to the Palestinian people. And she is warning that there is full-blown famine already on the ground. And she sat down with Kristen Welker from Meet the Press to talk about this famine and what the implications are going to be, long-term consequences for people that are experiencing the famine.
Whenever you have conflict like this and emotions rage high and things happen in a war, famine happens. And so what I can explain to you is that there is famine, full-blown famine in the north, and it's moving its way south. And so with what we're asking for and what we continually ask for is a ceasefire and the ability to have unfettered access to get in, safe and unfettered access to get into the into Gaza, various ports and various gate crossings. But we, you know, it hasn't always worked that way. It's been a very difficult run, and I'm so proud of our people on the ground there because it's dangerous, and they continue to deliver, continue even on the dark days when we're looted or we're run back in various directions. We still continue to deliver, but we need more. We can't get in at scale right now, and scale is most important. The only way that we're going to be able to help fetter the famine and keep the famine at bay at all is to get in at scale. You can't, and it's not just food. It's also sanitation, it's water, it's medicine, and it's still very difficult to get in.
I just want to be very clear, because what you're saying is significant, and I believe it's the first time we've heard it. You're saying there is full-blown famine.
Yes.
In northern Gaza.
I am. Yes, I am.
What does that mean for the people who live there, for the children who live there, and how quickly is it moving south?
Well, as far as, I'll speak to the children, the adults we know, they waste away, but children wasting is something different, because they're growing, they're, you know, they're kids at various ages, et cetera. And without proper nutrition, their brains aren't going to function correctly. Their bodies are not going to develop properly. Their bones aren't going to be solid as they should be, and to offer a better life for these people. So that's why it's so urgent that we get in, not just for the children, but also for the adults. And again, we have to get in at scale, and we have to make sure that the world understands what's at stake here. There's generations of children that are not going to have a better life, even if we can end this war, because of the famine.
Now, there's a couple of different elements here. One is talking about how difficult it is to get in. And that's a two-pronged deal. Not only are humanitarian trucks and movement being protested and blocked by civilians, Israelis, who don't want any humanitarian aid to feed children. Not only is that happening, but then when humanitarian aid does get through and humanitarians like World Central Kitchen, led by Jose Andres, when they go in to feed desperate and starving people, they are murdered by the Israeli military, which just happened a month or so ago.
Right. Even when they had coordinated their movements in advance and were in communication with the IDF. And, you know, Jose Andres had taken some time to process the loss of the World Central Kitchen members that were killed. And he, you know, at first said that World Central Kitchen would be withdrawing from Gaza, would be withdrawing their operations from Gaza. But he also announced last week that they would be returning to Gaza because the need is so great. And I thought that was a really powerful move. But in his, I think it was a Washington Post op-ed that he wrote, he said that he wants Israel to guarantee humanitarian aid groups safety.
Yeah.
And that they're not. And this is what Cindy McCain is talking about, that they are not allowing aid to get in.
Yeah. Even Cindy McCain is talking about this.
Right. And according to reporting today from Barak Ravid of Axios, a U.S. official told him that President Biden had asked Netanyahu that Israel reopen immediately the Kerem Shalom crossing between Israel and Gaza that was shut down on Sunday. And, you know, this is something that's frustrating, I think, for a lot of people, is that Biden is asking for that. And there's no leverage here.
There's no conditions on the billions and billions and billions and billions, I can keep going, and billions of dollars that we have given to support the genocide of the Palestinian people.
And we also have a clip here from reporter Hani Momed reporting that people on the ground, Palestinians on the ground, you know, who received these pamphlets falling from the sky telling them to move into a secure zone as Israel is advancing into Rafah, that they simply don't trust this because of the numerous instances now where Israel has told people to move into quote-unquote safe zones, only to then be bombed in those quote-unquote safe zones.
We could see and we could tell how worried people, how concerned they are. There's a state of panic. People who have already lost family members that they were told to move to evacuation zones are recalling these times when they were ordered sharply to move to certain designated areas as safe zone, only to get killed and bombed and killed in those areas, whether here in Rafah City or the central area or in the city of Khan Yunis. There is a huge level of mistrust now in the Israeli narrative in terms of evacuation zones. And what people are reacting to this is there, you can't create a safe zone in a war zone. The entire Gaza Strip is being relentlessly bombed, whether it's here in overcrowded Rafah City all these past months. And despite the calls for the ground invasion, which seen by and perceived by many people as a distraction, because at the same time, the Israeli military was extremely bombing Rafah City to a point where the destruction is quite visible in all the roads across this overcrowded city. The rubbles are filling the roads everywhere. Destroyed homes are everywhere. So Rafah hasn't been safe at all within the past 7 months and since the initial weeks of this genocidal war. So that's where people are not buying this new narrative of evacuation zone, because there isn't any evacuation zone at all. And the bombing included public facilities, UNRWA facilities, hospitals, and we've seen how hospitals were stormed.
So all of this is happening, by the way, as the International Criminal Court at The Hague is weighing whether they are going to issue arrest warrants for top Israeli officials, including Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. And the Mehdi Hassan's new news outlet,
Zateo.
Yes, Zateo, recently got a hold of this letter that is signed by several Republican senators. Basically,
it's just an unserious group of fucking people, man.
Yeah, it's Tom Cotton, Mitch McConnell, Marsha Blackburn. We get it, Ted Cruz. And
Katie Britt.
Oh, God.
I mean, come on.
Okay. Tim Scott, Marco Rubio, VPs.
Ted Cruz, yeah.
Yeah, the possible VPs.
So, desperate to be VPs.
Yes, this letter is basically threatening the International Criminal Court, threatening them to not take action, threatening them to not move forward on issuing arrest warrants.
There's no other way to categorize it as a threat. The last three words or four words are, you have been warned.
Right.
Let me just read this last paragraph. There's like seven paragraphs. Let me read this. Again, from the most unserious United States senators imaginable, the United States will not tolerate politicized attacks by the International Criminal Court on our allies. Target Israel, and we will target you. If you move forward with the measures indicated in the report, we will move to end all American support for the ICC, sanction your employees and associates, and bar you and your families from the United States. You have been warned. Unserious. This is what's been bothering me lately so much, is that we're alone on an island supporting Israel in this. The rest of the world is outraged. There is shared moral condemnation of what's taking place, and we're alone. Virtually alone, giving billions and billions and billions and billions of dollars to Israel to completely decimate an already decimated population. It is disgusting. And they're using language, notice, that they use surrounding Donald Trump, and I guess this will be our segue out of this, of the politicization of a prosecution of Bibi Netanyahu. It's not politicized. It's defending a defenseless population against a fucking act of genocide, you ghouls.
Right. So we'd love to know what you think about this. You can call, leave a voicemail, 657-464-7609, or you can send an email to idoubtit@dalamore.com. As you referenced there, Jesse, there is some additional Trump news. Not only is he back in court with his trial in New York, but he also had a fundraiser, I guess, over the weekend at Mar-a-Lago, where he made some very concerning comments. So this is going to be just kind of an overview of the latest Trump things. And then we're going to get a little bit deeper into these concerning comments that he made over the weekend.
Former President Trump heading back to court this morning following Friday's emotional testimony from one of Mr. Trump's former top aides, Hope Hicks.
We want hope.
Hicks, appearing under a subpoena, admitted she was nervous, later tearing up and taking a break to compose herself. Hicks also discussing the infamous Access Hollywood tape. Prosecutors say its release before the 2016 election helped propel the hush money scheme. Though Hicks said she was not engaged in negotiations, she testified Mr. Trump was, in fact, aware of the payments. The former president has denied allegations of affairs and pleaded not guilty. Mr. Trump Sunday making a stop at Miami's Formula One race with his own race for the White House in the spotlight. During a private meeting with GOP donors at his Mar-a-Lago estate Saturday, Mr. Trump comparing President Biden's administration to the Nazi secret police. According to audio obtained by NBC News, Mr. Trump accused Biden officials of running a Gestapo administration while venting about his legal troubles. The White House, in a statement, says the former president is echoing the appalling rhetoric of fascists. At that Mar-a-Lago retreat, a number of potential top VP contenders, including Senator Tim Scott, who voted to certify the 2020 election, but now repeatedly dodging when asked on Meet the Press whether he'd accept the results of the next election.
Is it just yes or no? Will you accept the election results of 2024?
I look forward to President Trump being the 47th president. Kristen, you could ask him multiple times.
Senator, just a yes or no answer.
So the American people, the American people will make the decision.
But I don't hear you committing
for President Trump. That's clear.
Now, it wasn't just Senator Scott making that trek to Mar-a-Lago. Some other potential vice presidential candidates included Senator Marco Rubio, Senator J.D. Vance, Congresswoman Elise Stefanik as well. But on the timing of it all, Mr. Trump has said he doesn't plan to make a VP pick until much closer to the Republican convention. That's just over 2 months from now in Milwaukee. Savannah.
All right. Hallie Jackson, thank you.
Yeah, he wants to allow them more time to kiss his ass before picking.
And to pass the litmus test, which is going to be denying the election.
Yeah.
And they were at that event, all these possible VP picks that are trying to impress him and making their appearances on the Sunday shows to be the most radical they can be. At the event this weekend that they keep referencing, the donor event, Donald Trump walked onto the stage, according to reporting from the New York Times, to that song that he recorded with the insurrectionists, the national anthem that he recorded with the insurrectionists. I guess I haven't heard it, but...
it's a mockery.
Sounds horrifying. And of course, it is, you know, illustrating his support of the insurrectionists. So these people know. They know who they're dealing with.
Yeah.
That's why they're going on these news shows and acting like they're not going to... Not acting like they're not going to accept the election results, because that's what Trump will require of them.
Yeah.
Now, the comments that he made, this is again according to reporting from the New York Times, he said, quote, these people, referring to the Biden administration, quote, these people are running a Gestapo administration, quote, and it's the only thing they have, and it's the only way they're going to win, in their opinion, and it's actually killing them, but it doesn't bother me. Of course, we know nothing bothers Donald Trump. He's very unaggrieved, Donald Trump.
Very also secure.
Yes.
Not an insecure man at all.
Yes.
He's a titan.
Yes. And before making...
Conquering hero, Brittany.
Yes. And before making this comparison again, according to reporting from the New York Times, Mr. Trump baselessly insisted that the various indictments against him and his allies in several states were being orchestrated by the Biden administration, which, let's just pause on the reporting aspect of this. It is funny that he continues to say that the DOJ is being weaponized against him, for example, when two Democrats are under investigation right now. Of course, we have Senator Bob Menendez, and now we have Henry Cuellar from Texas.
Both have been indicted.
Yes.
It's gone beyond the investigatory phase. There's indictments. There's evidence that has been presented to a grand jury, and the Biden DOJ is securing their prosecutions.
Right.
So what is it again? Witch hunt.
Doesn't seem to be weaponized against you. Seems to just be kind of, you know, doing investigations appropriately.
Seeking justice.
Right. Continuing with this reporting from the New York Times, quote, he said that before his indictment, he was gentler on Mr. Biden, despite the outcome of the 2020 election. You have to respect the office of the presidency, Mr. Trump said. And I never talk to him like this.
And Sleepy Joe, he's demented. He's hiding in the basement.
Right.
He can't remember. He doesn't know where he is. Shut the fuck up, Donald Trump.
He then went on to say that Democrats use welfare to cheat in elections and said that he would need an attorney general with courage and mocked Bill Barr, who was his former attorney general.
Who has endorsed him.
Right. Just said he would vote for him, even though he knows how dangerous he is. And so this bit about welfare, this will be the last thing that we read from this quote. When you are a Democrat, you start off essentially at 40% because you have civil service, you have the unions, and you have welfare, Mr. Trump said on Saturday. And don't underestimate welfare. They get welfare to vote, and then they cheat on top of that. They cheat.
Mm. Stranglehold on facts and reality, Brittany Page.
Yes.
Well, he also got held in contempt again for a 10th time today by Judge Juan Merchan. And it's something I want to ask you about, Brittany. I'm a little bothered that, well, let me just read this from the punishment and order section of this five-page order. We'll link in the show notes. It says, however, they say, well, your defendant will now face a fine of $1,000 for the one misstep in the held in contempt. However, because this is now the 10th time that this court has found defendant in criminal contempt, spanning three separate motions, it is apparent that monetary fines have not and will not suffice to deter defendant from violating this court's lawful orders. Therefore, defendant is hereby put on notice that if appropriate and warranted, those are words you need to pay attention to, that if appropriate and warranted, future violations of its lawful orders will be punishable by incarceration, and it is hereby ordered, blah, blah, blah. So my question is, do you think he's actually prepared to go through with that? And what would jail look like for Donald Trump? Would it be an overnight? Would it be a few hours in a cell? And also, if he's not really actually prepared to do so, don't fucking say it.
Yeah, it's pretty disappointing. And I think he's obviously getting special treatment. You know, I think about the years that I spent working in a treatment court, in a DUI drug court. And jail sanctions are part of the treatment program. And there are other types of sanctions. It's not as though every time you do something wrong, you get a jail sanction. There can be other types of things that you can do, write an essay, you know, various things. But there would be no circumstance in which someone has failed to do something appropriately 10 times and would avoid getting a jail sanction. That just does not happen for people who are not Donald Trump.
And brazen disrespect for the court.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And so he is getting special treatment. There would be no other person that would be afforded these privileges to be able to disrespect the court this many times and to not have consequences for that. And it's only because he's wealthy. It's only because he has power. And everyone should be enraged by that, because that's the point of justice, of the law, right? It doesn't matter if you have power. It doesn't matter if you have money. You're supposed to be equal.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's absolutely enraging, but I don't know what jail would look like, because the Secret Service has to be there with him. It's not like there's actually going to be a threat. You know, I think when you use jail sanctions in some of these, you know, programs or whatever we're talking about, there is an element to go into this place, see how terrible it is.
Yeah, how dangerous it is.
Right, be in this terrible environment, and that's supposed to be a deterrent. Oh, I don't want to go back there. It was terrible. It was dirty. It was scary. It was, He's not really going to have an actual jail experience. I mean, I think he will act like he did when
he
comes
out. He acts like a cold courtroom is jail.
Right. He's like, I'm freezing. Bring a jacket then. Jesus. Right? Bring a jacket.
Get that guy a Donald Trump branded Snuggie or something.
Yeah, put a Snuggie on. That would be perfect.
I can just see the AI art coming out right now. Donald Trump in a Trump-branded Snuggie.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Well, listen, the VP, Veep Stakes continues. We mentioned it a little bit with that list of signatories on that Senate letter. Christy Noem has been making the rounds, talking about murdering her puppy dog.
Oh, God.
And she went on the weekend shows again this weekend, and then this morning, to talk about an excerpt from the book that was found, where she claims to have had a meeting in North Korea with Kim Jong-un. Can you believe this?
An interesting choice for the governor of South Dakota to be going to North Korea and meeting with Kim Jong-un.
The book is called No Going Back, but it sounds like the publisher, Center Street, is going back on a couple of the details in the book.
Oh, I don't believe so.
Specifically, when you write in the book, I remember when I met with North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un. I'm sure he underestimated me. That, as I understand, is now being removed from the book at your request.
Yes. When correct? I became aware of that, we changed the content, and the future editions will be adjusted. And, you know, I appreciate that. I've met with many, many world leaders. I've traveled around the world. I should not have put that anecdote in the book. And at my request, they have
that specific meeting didn't happen.
I'm saying that I'm not talking about that meeting. I'm not talking about my meetings with world leaders.
But you there's do some talk that about are in meetings the book. With world leaders.
There's some that are in the book, and then there's some that's not in the book. Many
but
of them actually.
Why are there two specific mentions of meeting Kim Jong-un and talking about him, and a specific memory? I'm sure he underestimated me, having no clue about my experience staring down little tyrants. Did you tell your ghostwriter to
you
write
know,
that?
I've specifically have worked on policy for over 30 years. And over that time, I have traveled around the world and I have met with leaders around the world. And that anecdote, I've asked them to change the content and it will be removed.
It's a simple question. Did you or did you not?
That's the answer that I have for you is that it will be adjusted. And as soon as I became aware of it, that content was removed.
This is truly a remarkable skill, and it is a skill. I mean, it's not a useful skill. It's not a skill that you would want to have, but...
And in her case, not an effective skill.
Yeah, to be able to, without shame, I mean, you have to have zero shame, and you're being asked a direct question, right? You wrote about meeting Kim Jong-un in this book. It's now being removed. So did that not happen? What happened here? I've met with a lot of world leaders and I've done a lot of stuff. And as soon as we found out it was in the book, we're taking it out. It's like, who's we? Did you not write the book?
When I became aware that the thing that I wrote, quote unquote, was in the book that I wrote, I told him, oh, take the thing that I consciously wrote into the book that I just am now becoming aware is in the book. Make sure you take that out of the book.
Well, and apparently the audiobook has also already been recorded.
Of course.
And so she read that part in the audiobook, and they're going to need to edit it out of the audiobook as well. So, and the publisher has announced, we're editing it out. Any further questions need to go to the author.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because they're like, this is not our problem, bro. This is your problem.
It is strange that the publisher doesn't employ a fact checker to go through and make sure that the things are correct, because in no way did, unless seeing Kim Jong-un on TV constitutes a meeting with the dictator of North Korea, Kristi Noem did not meet with a murderous, genocidal dictator of North Korea, Kim Jong-un. No, she did not. She has probably never seen him even in real life. Like, she's a liar. And I think what this speaks to, there's one element of this speaks to, is the weird lack of reality within the Republican Party, that as she's writing this, she's thinking, oh, this is going to be good. This is going to be good. And doesn't think through how it's going to be received by the mainstream media or the general public, that this is not true. And why are you writing this? And then when you're asked about it, you get defiant and, well, that's just my statement. That's my statement.
Yeah, it's.
I'm not going to get into specifics about the world meetings that I've had. It's not specifics. It's did you or did you not meet with Kim Jong-un?
Yeah.
Because it can be verified.
Yeah, I don't get it. As someone who turns bright red at the slightest change in my emotional state, I get slightly embarrassed. I'm bright red. I get slightly like angry. I get a rage rash on my neck. Like I cannot imagine how she just sits there and she has to know, I don't know, that she is not answering any of the questions from the three people in front of her. And she just charges ahead, not answering those questions, knowing that everyone is like, what is going on in this person's head?
And that's not even to mention the puppy murder. You know,
yeah,
and the goat murder and the horse murder
and her wanting Commander to be murdered.
Right.
Yeah. Biden's dog. She's talking about how that would be like one of the first order of business would to be shooting Commander as well.
Which, by the way, makes me wonder about the Secret Service agents who have been bitten, because Brian Tyler Cohen has video of him getting licked all over his face by Commander on the White House grounds. He's not a vicious, crazy ass dog.
Yeah, it's very disturbing.
Commander knows. That's the deal. Commander is he's Antifa. He's anti-fascist. We're going to leave you there. We'd love to know what you think about this. These are any other topics that are on your mind. 657-464-7609. Of course, you can email us. idoubtit@dollamore.com. If you want to help support this show, if you want to help us make this show, we invite you to our Patreon page. It is patreon.com/idoubtitpodcast. For $2 a month, you can help move the conversation forward on an episode-by-episode basis, and we welcome you to join the Patreon family. We're going to leave you there. We love and appreciate you. Thanks to your support, your feedback, your communication. We love you very much. For Brittany Page, I'm Jesse Dollamore, and this has been I Doubt It.